This is Dolores, and I'm at the Black Archive Centre. Is that right?
The Black Cultural Archives.
Can you tell me your name?
My name's Kelly Foster.
And what's your name?
Hannah.
Okay, Hannah. So I'm going to be showing something so interesting. What is this?
So Hannah's kindly got out for us one of the oldest magazines that we have, or the oldest... one of the oldest magazines that we have. That is by a black publisher. It calls itself the first British Negro magazine. It was published in 1958. It's called Link Magazine, and we're looking at the white, black and green front cover that says "No Room at the Inn!" exclamation mark. And interestingly enough, if you look up here in the left-hand corner, there are a couple of hands, and it says "To Dwell in Unity," and there's a black and a white hand shaking each other, shaking hands.
Do you know who that man is? Because there's a man on the front cover, isn't there?
We don't know who he is, but the man on the front cover is trying to entice people to read the article inside. Let's see if we can find the article that it refers to.
Oh, okay.
Which is a little editorial reflecting on Christmas. So it's using the analogy of there being no room at the inn for Joseph and Mary and Jesus on Christmas Day. And it's speaking about...
Wow, look at this advert. It's a James A. Weatherall advert. It's an estate agent, isn't it?
Yeah, and it says, "Coloured applicants welcome." You've got to remember, this was 1958, when there was a time of extreme discrimination when it comes to housing for black people in the UK. And lots of people were being turned away from mortgages and discouraged from owning and buying houses. And then the renting market wasn't that much better. So this is an estate agent who are advertising in a black-owned magazine and saying that coloured applicants are welcome. But if we look on the branch office in Brixton. This magazine was actually published in Ladbroke Grove in 1958, and we were talking a bit earlier about the Notting Hill riots in 1958.
Yeah, which a lot of people wouldn't know about, would they?
Lots of people do know about it, but yeah, it's kind of when people think about rioting now, we're living in the 21st century, they tend to think of the 1980s. But the Notting Hill riots in 1958 were a particularly bloody episode in the history of black people in London, and there were some quite violent disturbances that were going on with the communities in Notting Hill.
Why is it so important to keep all this sort of paperwork?
Well, archives give us an important insight into history and heritage. They are the evidence. So, I mean, what my expertise and my field is in oral history, but the archives, the paperwork, also give us very important evidence in how we remember these times. This magazine tells us so much. We've just had a look at how it reflects the events of the time, the Notting Hill riots, the difficulties of housing. This is all represented in this magazine, that from the adverts and articles in a magazine. So even though this may seem like a bit of ephemera, a kind of disposable bit of publishing, it tells us a lot.
It certainly does. What's one of your favourite pieces? We're going for an antique now. What are we going for now?
Oh, we're going for a set of antique newspapers. So the magazine we looked at was from 1958.
Okay.
And these ones are slightly older. Let's see if we can find them. So this, we're opening up a grey archive box, an acid-free box, which is how we keep all the paper materials. All of the preservation materials, the boxes that you can see around your acid-free and designed especially to kind of withstand the deterioration of papers. The newspapers that we're looking at in here and pamphlets date back to the 1700s and 1600s.
1766.
Yeah.
Why have you kept this one?
These were bought by one of our predecessors, and I think they all in some place have a reference to either slaves or black people in Britain, but they're only parts of newspapers, so...
Okay, so these are it's the London Chronicle.
Yeah. That's the London Chronicle. It was estimated in the 18th century, so in the 1700s, that there were between 15 and 20,000 people of African descent living in England. And really, when you start to look at the pamphlets and the newspapers that were distributed in the cities of the UK, and we're looking at some examples from London and Edinburgh here, you can start to imagine the stories of those black people and what their lives would have been like in the cities. You've got to remember that in the 1700s, it was when the transatlantic slave trade was really building momentum, and Britain was placing itself at the top of the economic and distribution tree, let's call it, when it came to human cargo and human traffic.
Is there anything in there that we could read out at all that would give us some idea of what... Postboy, what's that?
Yeah, the Postboy, I mean, we've got newspapers here called the London Chronicle, whilst we've got the...
Oh, OK, the London Gazette. The Edinburgh Evening Courant, yeah.
And so there are...
What's the year is that?
1773.
Wow.
Celia, I think Celia's in there.
This is fascinating.
The Postboy.
When did this collection begin?
About 1981 was when we say that we first sort of started in earnest, when a group of educationalists got together and decided that because of the lack of black history and educational opportunities for people, that they would do something about it. And so from then it's been completely community based. So these were bought, but quite a lot, most of our material was deposited or donated by members of the community.
Oh.
And these are things that they think were important and still are important.
Which they are. I've got the London Chronicle from June 3rd, 1784. Oh, here, I've got something on this, just here.
Yep.
Poor Negroes, slaves alone, work hard and fair. What's that say? It's just there.
Still harder.
Oh, can you read that for me? Read us a little bit. This is from the London Chronicle.
Yeah. On Thursday, June 3rd, 1784, and the paragraph starts, "The poor Negro slaves alone work hard and fare still harder. It is astonishing and unaccountable to conceive what an amazing degree of fatigue these poor but happy wretches do undergo and can support. He is called up in the morning at daybreak and seldom allowed time enough to swallow 3 mouthfuls of hominy or hoe cake, but is driven out immediately to the field to hard labour, at which he continues without intermission until noon, and it observed a singular circumstance that they carry out a piece of fire with them, a kindle, won just by their work, let the weather be so hot and sultry. About noon is the time he eats his dinner, and he is seldom allowed an hour for that purpose. His meal consists of hominy and salt, and if his master be of humanity, he has a little fat. Skimmed milk, rusty bacon, or salt herring to relish his hominy or hoe cake, which kind masters allow their slaves twice a week, but the number of those, it is much to be lamented, are very few. But the poor slave generally fares the worse for his master's riches, which, consisting of land and negroes, their numbers increase their hardships and diminish their value to their proprietor, the experience precluding an extension of indulgence and liberality."
God.
And it goes on like that.
Yeah. So really what it's saying is that look after your slaves, otherwise you're going to decrease the value of them, and they'll be no good to you. What's homily?
I think it's possibly some kind of bread, or maybe some kind of milk and bread. I'm not 100% sure. But I guess it's some kind of carbohydrate.
Thank you.
It's okay.
Thanks so much. So what's homily?
From my knowledge of African-American food, homily is grits. I don't know what grits are made of. I think it's like semolina or something
like that. Is it like
that,
corn? Like the corn husk?
It might be maize, yeah. And then you make it into a kind of porridge.
Paste, yeah.
It's quite a select dish in America now in the South, I believe.
Yeah, well, it's kind of... I've always think it's really odd how kind of peasant and poor people's food sort of comes back and gets trendy.
Fashionable.
Like, what are you having? Polenta. And, you know, and it's something grand and it's just cornmeal and cuckoo too, Hannah and I.
Well, thanks so much for showing me this. I love this Link magazine. I really love it. So I've been shown these magnificent magazines called Flamingo. Are these British?
Yeah, well,
yeah, of course.
In the UK as well.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about them.
Oh,
this is look at that. It's a lovely lady sitting in a Is that a bumper car?
It looks like a bumper car, doesn't it? Or some kind of fairground ride.
What age is that?
These are from the 1960s. Let's see if we can find a date in here. 1964. And it was published out of Ludgate Circus in the city of London, EC4. So Flamingo was very much like the drum magazine. So published in the UK, but for a West Indian market.
Right.
So it would have been distributed all around the Caribbean. And it covers things like the future of the West Indies. You've got to remember we celebrated the 50th year of Jamaican and Trinidadian independence this year. So this is talking about the future of the West Indies with the rest of the islands becoming independent. What other articles can we find in here? The Garage Owner, which is a garage that is in New Morden, which is owned by a Jamaican called George R. Jackson. So it was basically writing about the British Legion chairman.
Yeah.
The Nottingham and Central Branch of the British Legion.
So he was the first black... Oh, he is.
He is, from Trelawney in Jamaica. And Mr. Johnny Brown. So again, we were looking at Link magazine a little earlier. Link is around 6 years before this issue of Flamingo that we're looking at. So it really allows you
some great photographs in there as well.
Absolutely.
What's this? A letter from David Joseph, a West Indian serviceman in the Aden.
Which I guess is Yemen now?
No, I thought it was in Africa.
Well, it's in the Horn of Africa anyway.
Yeah, I guess
In the Middle East.
Just read a little excerpt. It says, what are the West Indians doing in Aden? Almost to a man, they are here by custody of the British forces. 90% are Royal Air Force servicemen, the remainder army, with an occasional mate lot of seamen passing through.
Yeah. So, I mean, we just had a look through some of the magazines that we have just because they're such great visual.
They really are.
Very pretty ladies on the front.
Very pretty ladies.
For Flamingo.
Fully clothed, mind you.
And then, you know, these great articles really help depict the lives of West Indians living in the UK who were making their lives in the UK in the 1960s.
Do you know, do you think there's any magazines that really rival these nowadays, like modern ones? Because I think these are great. They've got some good stories in.
Well, what you're able to do... Let's put this flat down on the table. What you are able to do with our collection is that you can trace magazines from the 1950s, like Link, to Flamingo in the 1960s, through to another magazine called Roots in the 1970s.
Candice, which is the 90s. There's Candice America and Candice UK, and they're from the 90s, so you can see how it's kind of becoming a bit more sort of fashion conscious, whereas these are, although they are ladies on the front, are aimed mainly at men and have a mainly male readership.
Yeah, because they are quite manly features, aren't they? But nice features, respectable.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I definitely think there was a kind of political, with a small p, agenda going on with a lot of these publications, trying to portray an emerging community and respected members of that community. And also, you've got to remember, the 1960s was a time of incredible change. You had the civil rights movement in the States. You had the growing independence movement for a lot of these former British Empire countries who were gaining nationhood. So it was an incredible time of change, and I think Flamingo magazine does a lot to reflect that.
Well, I think you're doing a fabulous job here.
That's all right. So you've just seen a fraction of the things.
We've
just had a look at the newspapers and magazines. We've also got, I don't know, how many items do you reckon we have in the collection?
Thousands.
Tens of thousands.
Lots.
I was saying, if I worked here, I'd probably get sacked. You'd be saying, where's Dolores? I'd be saying, up an aisle reading all the magazines.
Yeah, we are kind of surrounded by kind of aisles and corridors of... archive boxes, and each archive box contains records and papers and memories that relate somehow to the experiences of people of African descent from the African Caribbean and African communities in the UK. So each box has a number of stories inside.
If you've got a little message for anyone out there. If you're, are you looking for more? Are you always looking for more material?
I mean, we're somewhat restricted where we are right now.
You are moving, though, aren't you?
We are moving. We're moving back to Brixton.
So let's say to people, don't send anything yet. But when you move to Brixton, please do.
Yes, I think we... Hannah, who you just spoke to, is the assistant archivist. And what they're doing is... developing a collection development policy. But I mean, if you are interested in learning how you can take care of your own archives, if you think there are collections of papers out there that we should know about, you know, please do let us know. And then we look forward to moving to our new home where we have more space and the facilities in which we can welcome people to come and use the collection and use the library and also have exhibitions and displays there as well.
Have you got a phone number that they can call you on or a website? Or
yeah, you can go to www.bcaheritage.org.uk or you can give us a call on 0207 582 8516.
Thank you very much,
Kelly. That's all right, thank you, Dolores.